ever since I began talking about love, I've had just a continuing amount of questions. And so I thought I'd say just a few more words about the issue. And it dawned on me, from what a few of you said, that you really weren't exactly sure what this love was that we were talking about. And where do you find it? And how do you feel it? How do you cultivate it? And so maybe we'll just talk a little bit about that first before we go into its role in overall evolution and development. So you can start by just picking a person that you love now, or perhaps somebody that you have loved, but that the presence is fairly fresh. And the feeling of love is fairly fresh. And then feel literally, in feeling that love, feel the heart region. And feel a warmth and loving embrace coming from the heart region. And then after you've established that a little bit, after there's a feeling of warmth, a feeling of love, a feeling of care for this other person, and after you can feel the warmth being generated in from the heart region, then also feel the whole region around the heart as the self-contraction, as literally contracting in the face of this love. So you're still feeling this love, you're still aware of it. But you're also aware of a sort of a contradictory impulse. And that is literally, instead of open and full and relaxed, there is a self-contraction. It is a tension around the heart, which also means the heart is the location of unqualifiable love, ultimately. It means that it's a self-contraction around your own infinite essence, your own ultimate reality, your own absolute self as unqualifiable love, embrace. So, being aware of both of these things now, being aware of some degree of warmth and love for at least one other person, and then being aware of the self-contraction, begin to, and we're going to do this on a relative plane, because notice that we simply could say that which is aware of the self-contraction is free of the self-contraction. And that's the already free nature of your ever-present self. And that's fine. But we're going to do the relative side of the street instead. And actually having this feeling of self-contraction and this feeling of congestion around the heart area, even as you're also feeling this degree of warmth, love, connection. Just literally relax, just undo that sense of contraction. And just literally let that congestion relax, let the tension around the heart relax and dissolve. And let the warmth and love that you are already feeling for this first person, let it expand because the self-contraction is relaxing and it's opening. And let that feeling of love expand to another person so that you can have that feeling of love for two people. And it can be male or female because it's not merely an erotic love or even especially an erotic love, but just love per se. And so feel that expansion of warmth and love and connection moving out from your heart and from this one person to include a second person in the same gesture. And continue to keep relaxing the self-contraction. Continue to just let that go. Continue to open that and open it and open it. And now include a third person. And start to feel that this loving, connecting, caring awareness isn't bound to a single person. It's in the nature of your subjective self, and that can take on as many objects, that is to say, as many people, as many sentient beings, as there are objects. Because it's the same perceiving self, the same true self, the same real self, the same absolute self, that is, in its own essence, unqualifiable love embrace. And so you can notice that the source of love is not coming from any one of these people. It's coming from your own awareness, from your own heart, and reaching out to those people. Now, the relative ego tends to learn and think that not only all happiness, but all love comes from out here. That this thing makes me happy. Oh, I got a new car. That car makes me happy. I got exactly the present that I wanted for Christmas. That makes me so happy. But that's not where the happiness is coming. What's happening is that you are getting something that you value, want, desire, seek. Once you get your hands on it, then seeking stops momentarily because you've got the goodie. And once seeking stops, then what shines is ever-present awareness. And that is the source of happiness that's then mistranslated onto the object. So I'm led to believe that the source of my happiness are these things that I can get as I line them up. Now, it's great to get things. It's a catastrophe to think that that's the source of the happiness. That's not the source. And the same goes for love. We're brought up, and the relative ego tends to have the experience that it never really loved until it met this one special person. And all of a sudden, it falls in love for the first time. Usually some sort of puppy love. And that's a very, very cool experience. It's like, this really rocks. And what that is it's stopping a certain non-awareness about the world and focusing it in a way that actually liberates the love that is present in the unqualifiable awareness that is the true self. And that love gets released by what we think is a particular person. And so if that person is lost, or dumps us, or runs off, or which it invariably happens sooner or later, one point or another, with some love object or another, then the world is it just catastrophically destroyed. And you can't find love at all. It's the love object has off and run away. So it's a matter of, as you expand your feelings of love, of noticing that it's not really attached to one person. That with just sort of the slightest relaxed, non-self-contracting awareness and movement, that you can expand love from the person that you might have felt as your one true love to somebody else, to another person. And so there's a sense in which this love awareness, you can start to see that it's actually not tied to or bound to or generated by a particular individual. It is generated by your relationship to that individual in that you have the feeling that they are the cause of this love awareness, whereas what they're doing in your particular understanding of relationship is they're allowing you to come to rest in the moment in that relationship. And coming to rest, stopping the grasping, the clinging, and the self-contracting and and simply resting in the presence of the person that you love, that resting in the presence of the moment is actually resting in your unqualifiable self. And that generates feelings of loveless, which you then almost immediately ascribe to the person, instead of to the way that you're relating to that one person, which is that they are just arresting to you. In their presence, you stop seeking and simply love. And the real source of that is a non-seeking, resting in pure presence, in pure awareness, unqualifiable love bliss, which is the nature of your true self, and which actually feels about all individuals in a fundamentally the same way. The fundamentally same love bliss present in your true self in its relationship to all other individual selves. This does not mean that you can't have special feelings about a particular individual, because you can. And you can because you are not only an absolute being, you're a relative being. And your relative self will continue to have its relative relationships. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Especially if you're also aware of your absolute self, which doesn't have favorites, but it is pure mirror mind. Absolute sky awareness, radically open, unqualified, unrestricted, unrestrained. And on top of that, relative feelings can arise. And are truly nothing wrong with that at all. In non-dual awareness, non-dual suchness, that is, recall the union of emptiness or absolute, unqualifiable awareness as such, and form, or the relative realm, relative things and events and feelings, objects and emotions. And both of those are included in one's final realization. So, if you go back to just the expansion of feeling to three people and feel, again, just the warmth and the caring, the loving, and feel it coming from the heart region. Do you feel it centered around the heart region? And allow it to expand from three people to literally everybody in this town. and from there to everybody in the state. And from there to everybody on the planet. That sense of unrestricted loving and caring and heart warmth, love bliss, is the nature of your true self. And in addition to relating to it as simply a pure witness or mirror mind, the mirror mind is named because objects come up and are always received by a mirror. But they're not grasped. They're not held onto. So they're received but not kept. There's a constant fluidity to mirrors and the reflected objects and to the mirror mind and its reflected phenomena. As we just qualify, just slightly, what unqualifiable awareness is like, that one of the first characteristics given to it is that of love. Love is this binding power that is this force of union, and this force of connection. And that's how you can picture the mirror mind as well, is that the factor that's accepting and allowing these objects to arise on it is simply love. So the witness is also a case of feeling love. And so you can witness this world, and with just a little bit of practice, switch that sort of pure witnessing for pure loving awareness. Loving without any distinctions. That part's important. And so you can start to get a sense, since you have presumably some sense of the witness, some sense of always already presence or awareness. And as you feel into that as love, then you can start to get a sense of the sort of part of the ultimate aspect of this universe is not just awareness or consciousness or being, but is love, bliss. And that force, as it has manifest in the relative plane, is the major force of Eros and the major drive behind evolution itself. It's the drive to connect objects. And we've talked about some of the effects of that Eros on evolution before, because some of the aspects of evolution without that drive to self-organizing, self-transcending complexity is simply incomprehensible. It makes no sense at all. And is, I'll put it not too bluntly, fucking impossible. The probabilities are so astronomically against what has in fact happened in evolution that the only scientific conclusion is that there is a anti-chance force operating out there in the midst of all this chance. Otherwise, you do not go from dirt to Shakespeare. Probabilities of that are nil. You can't get from atoms to molecules to cells with mere chance and natural selection. I mean, recall we're looking at, we start the picture up with evolution at the stage of atoms. Atoms have emerged. And they're all individual, and they're all running around, and they're all doing their own thing. And yet, several of them come together and, in a sense, start hanging out in a kind of dance that they're doing. And they're pulled together by anti-chance, anti-random, anti-separation force. And then suddenly, these atoms come together and bond into a single holon, molecule. And it has a single boundary around it, and it acts as a single thing. And is, in fact, a collection of a dozen or two dozen or more atoms. And now here's even weirder, is there's not just one kind of molecule, which is about the best you can get out of a chance and natural selection. It's at least vaguely conceivable that several atoms could come together and be held together by strong or weak nuclear forces. But to get from molecules to cells, the number of different types of molecules necessary to make a cell are dozens. And they all have to be tried out somehow before they all come together to make a cell work. So how the hell does that happen? But all of a sudden, these 2 to 3 dozen individually crafted molecules come together, and don't just come together in one place. A single boundary drops around them. Cell membrane drops around them to make a single individual holon out of these several dozen molecules. Something else is going on. And we can, I've said it, you know, many times. We can call it whatever we want. It is a self-organizing, self-transcending principle. And to the ancients, it was essentially Eros. Plato's version of love. Whenever Plato gets to something important he needs to talk about, he switches to mythology. Because it's just something that just rationality just isn't really going to get a handle on. So when he comes to ethics or any of those kinds of things, he's very rational and really attempts to drive rational reasons for the propositions that he puts forward. Then he gets to things like love, and he switches to these myths that some are really, really goofy. But some are really, really beautiful. And the aspect of the myth involving the generation of love between human beings, between men and women, was, as he put it, men and women were once whole, but were torn in two. And the pursuit and desire of that whole is called love. So there was once an original hermaphrodite, a single being. Had no sex, had no love, nothing. Just its self-contained existence. It was torn in two. It's torn into a male half and a female half. And the pursuit and desire of that original wholeness is called love. So, whether we use that version of Eros, or whether we use some of the more modern speculations, Eric Jantz saying that evolution is self-organization through self-transcendence, which is just fine with me. It's that same fundamental feeling that you feel radiating from your heart region as the self-contraction relaxes. And it's an energy that literally goes all the way back to the Big Bang, to the first creation of atoms and molecules and cells. And that unifying, self-organizing, connective drive is apparent throughout the entire evolutionary tree. As things get more and more complex, and more units are brought into these sort of love unions, and they are selected precisely because they're more complex and they have more consciousness and they're higher developed. That's precisely the selecting force for everything that unfolds in evolution. And if it doesn't have that, it just won't stick. So we see this continual unfolding, and all the way up into, of course, including human beings themselves. And the development, we see this up to the emergence of humans, And then, of course, the developmental growth in values and worldviews and ethics of human beings themselves. And what do we see? What's the fundamental principle in human evolution? It's increasing degrees of unity, increasing, which is also an increasing degrees of freedom. But on the unity side, the identity of human beings, with every major unfolding and the emergence of every major new value structure or new worldview or new ethical perspective, in every case, that increase in perspective is an increase in individual human beings' capacity to expand their identity to include others. And that means to treat others as yourself, to feel that close to them, to feel a type of love bond with them. And that goes from first person, where love is essentially felt only for the self, in the self sense. And that expands into second person, and the capacity to expand one's sense of identity, what I call myself, to include my family, my tribe, the larger society that I'm a member of, and actually feel a connection with those individuals. And individuals that aren't part of that society, I don't feel that connection with, because I'm still growing, still evolving. But the evolution is still being driven by this drive towards higher and higher unions, higher and higher identities. So when we reach third person, then there's a capacity for world-centric, to feel a fairness and a justice and a care for all human beings, regardless of race, color, sex, or creed. And that's just really unheard of. But individuals can start to feel that as a fundamental identity. And they're fundamentally embarrassed by ethnocentric talking or thinking or activity. They're disturbed by it. Fourth person perspective is a perspective on that, checking to see that it's applied in all cases. It gets caught up in separate cases often. So it denies universals and denies what would look like a world-centric approach, even though its own approach is, of course, world-centric. And so it gets a little bit tangled up in its own desire to straighten things out. This is clarified with the emergence of second tier. Second tier is the beginning of stage in development the likes of which humanity has never seen anything. And that is an integral perspective, a perspective that finds value in all previous perspectives. And that's just unheard of. There's been nothing anywhere close to that in the course of human history. And the type of society that it's going to generate can only be wildly speculated about. But we've never had a worldview that not only had that big a perspective, but that was that genuinely loving. That genuinely cared for other human beings and other sentient beings. As if it was part of its own family, its own self, its own identity. Essentially, what we see in human evolution is that as the self-identity boundary expands, then the love itself that we can feel for human beings expands with that boundary. So as our identity goes from first person to second person to third person to fourth person to fifth person, then our self-identity is expanding. What we can actually feel as being our self, that expands with other individuals that we can feel a connection to, a warmth with, a loving caringness with. And that's the essentially emotive driving energy, the loving caring, the love bliss. And there are cognitive components, and kinesthetic components, and ethical components. But the emotional, emotive drive is loveless. And this involves states as much as structures. But it's really a variation on Plato. It's this sort of overall love bliss. It's that the cosmos was once a whole, but was torn into fragments. And the pursuit and desire of that whole is called love. And so that's something that starts with the Big Bang and drives the formation of atoms and molecules and cells, organisms, human beings, worldviews, perspectives. And it was whole prior to involution. And is seeking and driving towards the recovery of that whole in evolution. So, the next time circumstances lead you to ponder love, whether you just fall into it, or out of it, or get dumped, can reflect on some of these items. They're interesting. They're part of what's arising moment to moment.